Chapter 35. Today is Christmas Eve. Across London, the shops and taverns are filled with people in high spirits, the streets bustling with this one carrying home a fragrant tree or that one selecting a fat goose for supper. I should be filled with the Christmas spirit and the urge to spread goodwill to my fellow man and woman. Instead, I am contemplating the puzzle that Nell Hawkins has left me to put together. Go where no one will, where it is forbidden. Offer hope. Go where the dark hides a mirror of water. Face your fear and bind the magic fast to you. It makes no sense. Stick to the path. They will lead you astray with false promises. Who? What false promises? The entire thing is a riddle wrapped inside another and another. I have the amulet to guide me, but I do not know where to find the temple, and without that I have nothing. It vexes me till I want to pitch my washbowl across the room. To make matters worse, Father is not home. He did not come home from his club last night. I am the only one who seems concerned about this. Grandmama is busy barking orders at the servants for our Christmas dinner. The kitchen is a flurry of cooks tending to puddings and gravies and pheasant with apples. He wasn't here for breakfast, I ask. No, Grandmama says, pushing past me to yell at the cook. I think we shall omit the soup course. No one bothers with it anyway. But what if he's hurt? I ask. Gemma, please. Mrs. Jones, the red silk will suffice, I should think. Christmas Eve dinner comes and goes, and still there is no father. The three of us set about opening our gifts in the parlour, pretending that there is nothing amiss.
Ah, Tom says, unwrapping a long woollen scarf. Perfect. Thank you, Grandmama.
I am glad you like it. Gemma, why don't you open yours? I get to work on the box from Grandmama. Perhaps it is a beautiful pair of gloves or a bracelet. Inside are matching handkerchiefs embroidered with my initials. They're quite lovely. Thank you, I say.
Practical gifts are always the best, I find, Grandmama remarks with a sniff.
The unwrapping of gifts is over within minutes. Besides the handkerchiefs, I receive a hand mirror and a tin of chocolates from Grandmama, and from Tom a jolly red nutcracker, who amuses me. I've given a shawl to Grandmama, and to Tom a skull to keep in his office some day.
I shall call him Yorick,
Tom says, delighted, and I'm glad that I've made him happy. Father's gifts sit under the tree, unopened.
Thomas, Grandmama says, perhaps you should go to his club and ask for him. Make some discreet inquiries. But I'm to go to the Athenaeum tonight as a guest of Simon Middleton,
Tom protests. Father is missing, I say.
He's not missing. I'm certain that he will be home at any moment, probably laden with gifts he's travelled to get on a whim somewhere. Do you remember the time he arrived on Christmas morning like St. Nicholas himself, riding an elephant?
Yes, I say, smiling at the memory. He'd brought me my first sari, and Tom and I had coconut milk, lapping it from bowls as if we were tigers.
He'll be home, mark my words. Doesn't he always turn up?
You're right, of course, I say, because I want desperately to believe him. The house falls into hushed tones of gasping fires and steady clocks, the lamps shushed to glowing murmurs of their former brightness. As it's after 11 o'clock, the servants have retired to their rooms. Grandmama is snuggled into her bed, and she thinks I am tucked safely in as well. But I can't sleep, not with Father gone. I want him to come home, with or without an elephant. So I sit in the parlour, waiting. Kartik slips into the room, still dressed in his coat and boots. He is out of breath.
Kartik, where have you been? What is it?
Is your brother at home?
He's very agitated. No, he's gone out. Why do you ask?
It's imperative that I speak with your brother.
I rise to my full height. I've told you he is not at home. You may tell me. He takes a poker and stabs at the brittle logs. They flare to life. He says nothing, and I am left to imagine the worst.
Oh, no! Is it Father? Do you know where he is?
Kartik nods.
Where?
Kartik cannot look me in the eyes.
Bluegate Fields.
Bluegate Fields? I repeat. Where is that?
It is the dregs of the world, a place inhabited only by thieves, addicts, murderers, and the like, I am sorry to say.
But my father, why is he there?
Again, Kartik cannot look at me. He is addicted to opium. He is at Chin Chin's, an opium den.
It's not true. It can't be. I've cured father. He's been better since the magic, hasn't asked for a drop of laudanum. How do you know this?
Because he bade me drive him there last night, and he hasn't left since.
My heart sinks at this. My brother is with Mr. Middleton at his club.
We must send for him.
No, the scandal. Tom would be humiliated.
Yes, wouldn't want to upset the Right Honourable Simon Middleton.
You're too bold by half, I say.
And you're lying about not wanting to humiliate Tom. You're saving yourself.
The hard truth of this stings me, and I hate him a little for saying it.
There's nothing we can do but wait until your brother returns,
Kartik says. Do you mean leave my father in that place?
There is no other choice.
He's all I have, I plead. Take me to him. Kartik shakes his head.
It is out of the question. Bluegate Fields is not the sort of place for ladies.
I am going whether you take me or not. I walk swiftly toward the door. Kartik takes hold of my arm.
Do you know what could happen to you there?
I shall have to risk it. Kartik and I stand, opposing each other. I cannot leave him there, Kartik.
Very well,
he says, relenting. He gives my figure a bold appraisal.
You will need to borrow your brother's clothes.
What do you mean?
If you must go, you shall have to go dressed as a man.
I race up the stairs, hoping I do not wake Grandmama or the servants. Tom's clothes are a mystery to me. With difficulty I manage to undress, taking off the many layers and my corset. I sigh with relief when free of it. I pull Tom's trousers over my woolen stockings and select a shirt and coat. They are a bit snug. I am tall, but not slender as he is. Still, they will have to do. Securing my hair beneath his hat is a task, though. It threatens to spring from my head, and to wear Tom's shoes requires that I stuff the ends with handkerchiefs, as his feet are a full inch and a half larger than my own. It makes me walk like a drunk. How do I look? I ask, coming down the stairs. Kartik scoffs.
Like someone who shall be set upon by every hooligan in East London. This is a terrible idea. We'll wait until your brother returns.
I will not leave my father to die in an opium den, I say. Pull the carriage round.